This is Sound Ideas, I'm Willis Kern. A rash of shootings in Bloomington last year is being blamed on so-called hybrid gang members. And Police Chief Brendan Hefner says those younger gang members are not just a problem for police.
I have spoke to some leaders of some traditional gangs around here, and they tell me they have no control of them, that they don't listen.
GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with the police chief about the semi-beneficial role of orthodox gangs in suppressing street violence, plus the body cam pilot program and possible immigration enforcement. So Blaze won't stop digging holes in your garden? There are steps to get your pets in harmony with your landscape. Patrick Murphy checks in with GLT's Grow. And singer-songwriter Sarah Quab Normal previews her performance as part of First Friday in downtown Bloomington. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's March 1st, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT. With additional support from the Jack Batal Real Estate Group, more information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner took a step toward a second term as he easily outdistanced a crowded field of challengers in Tuesday's primary election. Renner totaled 3,667 votes, while Alderman Kevin Lauer finished second with 1,450 votes. The two will face off against each other in the municipal election on April the 4th. The third went to former talk radio host Ian Bain with 1,067 votes. Rounding out the field was retired firefighter Robert Fike with 788 and Alderman Diana Howman with 643 ballots cast. Renner claimed victory early on at a party of supporters at Anjou Above in downtown Bloomington. The incumbent had poll watchers monitoring final results posted at each polling place and tallied the results ahead of the Bloomington Election Commission tally available online. Speaking to a crowd of about 140 supporters, Renner said the victory is an endorsement of his tenure as mayor. He promised to work hard over the next 5 weeks. And Renner was asked, how should the fact that he attracted four primary opponents reflect on his mayoral performance?
Actually, it's an excellent question. I would say, though, that what we have had is a group of people who, a very small group, who were really upset with City Hall. And no matter how much I tried to reach out to them, we weren't able to, no matter how much information, win them over.
Renner told GLT News he'll figure out a strategy to defeat Lauer, who has served one term as alderman from Ward 1 on Bloomington's southwest side.
He has literally no record. He has never got a single ordinance passed in his entire 4 years. He's never tried to work with anyone to get anything passed. So it's easy to just make false promises, and I do have a record. Some people might not always agree with it, but I've done something.
Lauer, who campaigned on a platform of focusing on areas of the city outside of the central business district, said he'll be a watchful steward of taxpayers' funds. Lauer says he knows he'll need to draw strong support from those who backed the three other candidates to have a chance at victory over Renner next month.
I need to engage the folks that have voted for Ian Bain. I certainly need to engage the folks that voted for Robert Fike. Probably Bobby and I are as similar as two people could be and still be in the race. And certainly Diana has a group of folks that would maybe consider me as well.
And Lauer says the dynamics in a one-on-one matchup will be different than in a five-way race.
The primary is not exactly the same electorate that will be involved in the general election. Will certainly attract a much wider group of folks.
Bain, who finished third, did not make himself available to GLT News. Lauer said he would not align himself with Bain, but he said he would welcome the support of those who voted for Bain. Both are regarded as political conservatives. Fike said he would support Lauer in next month's general election.
I would definitely throw my support behind Kevin and help in what we believe in, which is reducing taxes and reducing the non-essential frivolous spending.
Howman declined to endorse either candidate, telling supporters she'll use the experience of running for mayor to be a better Ward 8 alderman.
This has been a phenomenal experience for me. I know I'll be a better alderman for the next 2 years because of what I've learned. And so I won in that respect.
Again, the general election, which will also include contested races in at least four Bloomington wards, is April the 4th. Bloomington's crime rate dropped 5% last year overall. Shootings were up, though. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Police Chief Brendan Hefner, who says Bloomington is still small enough to have crime rates significantly shaped by the arrests of a few small groups of people. Hefner says last year, two repeat juvenile gun offenders were charged as adults to help slow the rash of 39 shootings.
I will tell you, both of them have been afforded opportunities to try to go down another path. Both of them spent time in JDC, the Juvenile Detention Center, and unfortunately for them, they kept on the same path, and this is what it resulted in. And it is sad. However, on the plus side is that hopefully some other juveniles who hang around them or see that start trying to rethink things in their own minds in regards to their actions, and hopefully they will choose another path.
Were those juveniles involved in the hybrid gangs that have been a problem in the community?
Yes.
Gang involvement is not generally subject to remediation. There are some reinforcing factors. The gangs provide a social network. They provide financial assistance. They provide psychological reinforcement, much as a healthier structure of a family does if they're not getting it at home. It's a terribly difficult thing to crack the attractiveness of it once people are in that. What's going on undercut the positives of gangs as people who are involved in them see them?
Well, that's two-pronged. First of all, their financial assistance is illegal.
There is that, yes.
Yes. But you are correct. Some people feel more of a family-type atmosphere, even though it's not the right atmosphere or environment in the gang, as opposed to being at home. However, the anomalies are is that you have your traditional gangs here, you know, the gangster disciples, you know, vice lords. I mean, we have that. Some are older. But these hybrid gangs are kind of an anomaly because all of those things you mentioned, absent some kids being in gangs, the reason that these hybrid gangs are causing so many issues is because they don't want to be in a hierarchy like a traditional gang. They just want to do what they want to do. So that causes extra problems because there's nobody telling them, hey, you might not retaliate against that other gang right now because it wouldn't be good, or, you know, there might be some repercussions there. Sometimes, you know, gangs, it's funny because they can fight each other and be in conflict, but when there's some money to share or some money to be gained, they can work together on that. And if that could be lost, that's something to consider. Well, these hybrid gang members, they do not care. And a lot of the shootings simply come from making what they deem as disrespectful videos about each other. And it's really disheartening. But as far as what we're doing, obviously we have to keep enforcing the law. But also, with the two-prong approach, is being more pro-social. That community house is going to help us get out, because we have to start hitting kids at like 11 and 12 before they get 13, 14, getting these hybrid gangs to kind of get them on the right path. So working with Boys and Girls Club, I'm going to speak with a group of young men or mentees for the 100 Black Men. So bottom line is we're trying to get to them earlier than what we are. We will still work with everyone now and afford them those opportunities, but the point you made is we want to get them before we get in it, before they get in these gangs, because it is hard to get them out.
Would you discuss this a little bit about how the hybrid gangs became to have a larger presence in Bloomington Normal, and how the traditional gang structures, which have a hierarchy of leaders that can sometimes suppress violence in favor of illegal business, receded in importance?
Well, the kids in the hybrid gangs are not unlike some regular kids who aren't in gangs. Some kids just do not want to, they don't like authority. They don't like being told what to do or having to ask what to do. And that's not all kids right now, but you see that. And you hear about it in the schools from teachers with kids. You know, they don't want to listen to anybody else. Well, it's the same with these hybrid gang members. They want to do what they want to do. They'll be loosely affiliated with the traditional gangs for some credibility for them, but besides that, they do what they want. And I will tell you, I have spoke to some leaders, some traditional gangs around here, and they tell me they have no control of them, that they don't listen. But they also said that these two gentlemen who unfortunately are moving to adult court, that has got the attention of hybrid gang members.
So how many younger hybrid gang members would you estimate are in the community right now?
Oh, we probably have a little over 100.
And how many traditional gang members?
I think total overall we probably have, because there's people who say they're in a gang, and then there's people who say they aren't in a gang, but they're with them all the time. So that number can vary from 150 all the way up to 250.
And do the reporting lines still go to Chicago or to St. Louis or where for the traditional gangs?
Well, ultimately, yes, they still go to Chicago. That's pretty much where they report to. But you know, everybody kind of tries to be kind of isolated too. And knock on wood, you know, we have not had that many issues with the traditional gangs that we have had around here. You know, we had the incident at Chuck E. Cheese. There are some people going to have some repercussions about that, but I was able to get the ear of some of the traditional gang members who were involved in that, and it really just started over some nonsense, one person running into another or somebody saying something, and even they understand that's pretty embarrassing and not the right thing to do.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner. One of the things you have begun is an officer-worn body camera trial, and one of your department priorities for this year is to expand that to include all patrol officers. Can you talk about what the learning curve has been like in the trial period and how you're going to tweak the rollout when it finally does come?
Well, first of all, we had to find a camera that would kind of work with our existing software for our in-car units. So, you know, we're looking for something like that. But beyond that, you know, the learning curve is camera placement, you know, because some people could wear cameras and all you would see is like a person's chest or stomach. So you have to learn those things. Obviously, the law dictates when the camera has to be on and when the camera can be turned off, how long video is kept, which is 90 days if it's not flagged for a crime or anything, and then battery life. Well, we're learning that some of the cameras, the battery life isn't as long, so you have to recharge them faster. And I learned this from other agencies, and that is why when they first came out, you know, you kind of have to take your time, because just like anything else that's new, you get a lot of pop-up companies. We don't want to be with a pop-up company because they can be gone in a year or two, and then if you have some equipment from them and it's faulty and it's not working, you have nobody to repair that. You know, you have no service contract that's enforceable. But I would say just getting used to having the cameras, wearing the cameras, and being cognizant of that, seeing how they work well, and the process afterwards, you know, when you review them, you know, some things will have to be redacted. You know, we have to buy software to be able to redact things from the camera footage. It's not just buying a camera. The other thing is, you know, having a server. You have a camera on when you go use a restroom and things of this nature. And even while it may not be on, the cameras are always recording. By law, it has to have a 30-second pre-event. So, you know, people have concerns about that. If, you know, 30 seconds before an incident happened, you know, if they were in a washroom or somebody flagged it for something or they were kissing their spouse, it can't be deleted. It's different. But I would say camera placement, reassuring when it's on, when it's off. There's little indicators that remind the officer when the camera is on, so in case he left it on for no reason, they can understand that. And just getting used to them in general. But they are going to be a good tool.
How far are you in the trial? When do you plan to go to a full rollout? What have the officers been saying who've been using them in the trial?
I think we've been at it now maybe a little over a month. We will probably go through April. Actually, one of the manufacturers we have now, they're already coming out with another camera that is supposed to work better. So the officers at first, you know, when the camera's on, when it's off, sometimes downloads weren't going well because we want ours to download by themselves without the officers having to do that. We wanted a device that would be, or equipment, that is as user-friendly as possible, and the officers don't have to worry about downloading information and that it does it electronically. We do weekly or bi-weekly assessments, so we hear from the officers, and you know, at the end of the trial, if we need to do something else, then we will do it. Obviously, these new cameras are coming out, and we will look at those, but I'm hoping by summer, late summer, maybe we decide to go forward if we have a good product.
Another departmental priority for this year is continuing department-wide training focused on cultural diversity. What kind of training does that entail, and where are you in that?
Well, we're getting ready to start some new training, probably more in the spring and in the summer. We're going to have procedural justice, and that kind of talks about law enforcement and working with people. Basically, it comes down to treating people how you want to be treated. Not that we don't, but this is one of the courses that was mandated by the law that came out. And I will tell you, we had cultural diversity training just about 2 years ago, and it was our plan to do it every 2 or 3 years anyway. It was before the Presidential Task Force report came out because we thought it was important. We talk about people from different ethnicities. We talk about people from the LGBTQ community, because it's important for us to have an overview and understanding of people. I mean, it was enlightening to me to learn things about people going through the transgender process and how they can be in between that process, you know, when you are speaking with someone. And I don't even mean just even in an enforcement role, just in general. And what that does is that helps raise our awareness to people. Does that mean we aren't going to do our jobs? No. And I will tell you honestly, we can have all the training in the world, but the best thing for us to do is spend more time out and engaging people, and that is one of the main things. That's the best way to get to know people. And, you know, it can be a little frosty at first with certain people, but we're trying to stay consistent.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner. Where stands the dialogue with the Black Lives Matter group and other groups that are concerned about relations with the police?
They have their own agendas. I have met with them. I answered questions that they had posed of me at their meeting.
And there's been a lot of coverage about how a yes-no format is not conducive to dialogue and perhaps not fair to police. Has there been anything since that?
They did attend. They were invited to and attended the last MAP meeting. And at that MAP meeting, I expounded upon my responses at their meeting. And I want to make it clear, when I went to their meeting, I was not told about that format. Because obviously that is not a format where ideas could be exchanged or I could expound upon anything. So I provided answers that I would have provided had I been permitted to at their meeting. And, you know, we had dialogue and they had some more questions. And then we will probably meet again at some time. But we are awaiting them to send us some more questions or topics they would like to discuss.
So the second bite at the apple went a little better, you're saying?
From my viewpoint, yes, because I was allowed to expound upon it. But yes, I think it went better. And what's important is there are different concerns, but, you know, it's not just about Black Lives Matter. You know, we're at the MAP meeting. MAP organization has been around for years. So it wasn't fair for me anyways just to provide information exclusively to them that I wouldn't provide to other members of the community. And the interesting thing was is that there's some catching up that Black Lives Matter has to do in regards to why there are certain policies and why there are certain laws. Like, I'm waiting for them to get me some information about questions they had about the complaint forms on officers, why there has to be a notary, why there has to be verbiage in there that a person can be arrested and charged with perjury if they file a false police report. And I will tell you that if a person believes something in their mind and that's the way it is, it doesn't turn out that way, there's no issue there. But if you go to the 10th degree and just basically falsify information against an officer, which is taken seriously because we review it, then we owe it to the officer to follow up on that. But even when I was in state police and I had a number of years internal investigations, I think only three times did we ever arrest people for that. However, you know, as far as having a notary, that's the police officer's Bill of Rights. That's a law. Having, you know, that other verbiage in there that you could be arrested, that's part of the law. So if they have some other language that they would like me to review to possibly change our form, which I just did about 2.5 years ago for the NAACP, I'll still look at it. I'm always open, you know, to ideas.
Do you acknowledge, though, that it can have a chilling effect, that sort of formal legal verbiage can have a chilling effect on dialogue or on reporting?
I look at it two ways. If you were going to accuse somebody outwardly, just accuse somebody of something falsely, there should be some consequences to that. And I did not make up the law. That's how it was. And, you know, some people ask, they say they're scared to file a complaint. They don't want to come to the department. As I explained in Black Lives Matter, the form is on our website. You can fill it out, get it notarized, and send it in. There is a charge at certain places if you go get it notarized. However, you could fill the complete form out, bring it into the department, and we'll notarize it for free and start investigating it. If there's issues with how we're doing something, you know, an officer deserves a process just like a citizen. But I want to know about it so we can investigate it, because if we're doing something wrong, we need to take corrective measures. And that's where it starts. Nobody has ever been harmed coming to that police department. Not during my tenure. I've been around here almost 30 years. Ever. So when people tell me they're scared, I think people hear things about other departments, or they start talking about the past and other places. And that is not the case. If you come and the sergeants will actually help you go through the form and fill that out. But as far as letting a person know that they could be arrested for filing false information, I would ask you to weigh that against them providing false information if somebody did that and then later being arrested and they said, well, I didn't know that. I wouldn't have put that on there. So that's what it is. But officers deserve a process just like anybody else, and we take it seriously.
Do you have a date for the next contact with Black Lives Matter?
No. And like I said, I look at things, be it Black Lives Matter, I'm working for the entire community. And whatever suggestions they have or anybody else, I look at it in regards to what's best for the community, regardless of what side of town it's on or whatever. That's what we're trying to do, and that's what we're trying to get at. And, you know, there have been some things going on. I mean, trying to limit the scope of what law enforcement does. Well, we see the results of that up in the Chicago area. I don't want that to happen here.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner. Speaking of community fear, there's been an upswing in fear in the immigrant community in a number of cities nationwide. What are you seeing here following the transition to the new presidential administration and the increase in immigration enforcement that administration is promulgating?
Well, I do know that some, I can't remember the name of the organization, they had approached the mayor about concerns. And I will tell you, and this is what sometimes gets troubling to me, we aren't a perfect community, and we aren't a perfect law enforcement agency, and we can always strive to be better. But it seems like there are people here, and some people who aren't even from here, they've just come here, and they want to try to paint us under the broad brush of what's going on in other communities. But first and foremost, I would tell you is that I don't work for ICE. What they are doing, those are their marching orders. So I don't do that. I think we are a welcoming community. Having said that, when we arrest people, we don't ask them about their immigration status. That could come up depending on what they're charged with when they're sent over to the county jail during that processing part.
But you still have to deal with the perception on the street when you come in contact with the immigrant population. And how is that going right now?
And no issues, to my knowledge, whatsoever. But what I was going to tell you is, be you an immigrant, be you a citizen or anybody else, when you break the law, you're going to be arrested. And we aren't reducing charges just because of a person's status. Like I say, we aren't concerned about that. I want people to know that when we arrest somebody, it is for the crime they broke, not because of their immigrant status. And we don't do that. You know, I will tell you, we have arrested some people in the past, from what I understand, who had committed serious crimes. But as far as the deportation and all that, we have nothing to do with that.
But have you seen perhaps a drop in reporting of crimes by the immigrant community that could be traced to fear of the current situation?
That I don't know. You know, we have the MAP meetings, and there are people there from various communities, and that issue has not been brought up. I would suspect we have a MAP meeting in April, and it might come up then. But what I'm trying to get at is some people are thinking that we're going to start doing what was happening in Milwaukee and some other places where local officers were deputized by ICE to do something, and they're just simply looking for it. We don't do that. We've never engaged in that, and we don't plan on engaging in that. We're just going to keep on trying to protect and serve our citizens here. If somebody is concerned with that, they can come talk to me if they hear this interview. But we don't do that. I will tell you, though, that I've heard where, you know, immigration can come in and they do what they do can be going. Sometimes we might not even know. But as far as us doing that, that is not what we do. And that is not what I plan on us doing. Anything that we do will be law enforcement related and related to crimes, not because of a person's immigration status.
That's Bloomington Police Chief Brendan Hefner speaking with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Tomorrow, during Sound Ideas, the in-studio guest is McLean County Sheriff John Sandage.
Support for GLT comes from Connect Transit, proud to provide sustainable transportation options for Bloomington Normal, connecting you in new ways with new Sunday service and an app for iPhone and Android that allows riders to track buses in real time. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And you're tuned to Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Coming up, meet singer-songwriter Sarah Kwa of Normal. She is performing at Bloomington's First Friday event coming up this week. You're not the only one who enjoys your yard. Your pets do as well. And as Patrick Murphy explains on this edition of GLT's Grow, you should take steps to make sure your landscape and your animals are in harmony with each other.
When we garden, there are members of our family whom we should keep in mind, and that's our pets. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert in the field. From the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, it's Patrick Murphy. Hello there, Murph.
Hi, Laura Kennedy.
Hey, today on GLT's Grow, Murph has advice for sharing our gardens and yards with our pets, which I think is a marvelous idea.
I do, too. The pets are special to lots of us, and boy, I just get a little frosty thinking about our little pets, you know, and just love them to death, and you don't want anything to happen to them. But it's funny how when you have pets, that they're like people, and they can go from hero to zero. So you turn your pets out in the garden, and most people have dogs and cats, right? But some people have horses. Some people have goats, right?
Yes, they
do. Some people have pigs, and the little ornamental pigs, you know, the pot belly pigs, not the ones you eat, you know, that just hang around for about a year and leave. But those animals, they don't have much in common other than that they're warm-blooded mammals mostly. There's some snake lovers and reptile lovers out there too, but animals seek the furthest point habitually. So if you have a pet that goes outside, dog, goat, You're one person that has a bison in their house. I've seen that on a program before. They seek the furthest point. They'll go as far as their boundaries will allow them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for all. Another thing that's true for all pets that we share our garden with, it's their feet that do the most damage, not as much as the digging. And lastly is the elimination. So all those right. are the three things. And they are all of the domestic animals that we have are susceptible to injury or illness from the elimination of wild animals. Their urine, their feces is dangerous mm-hmm. to a lot of animals. So for all the pets that the Grow listeners have, that's what they have in common. Here's some of the things that they don't have in common. So let's go with the kitty cats for a second. It's,
okay.
it's hard to share the garden with a kitty cat because cats are hard to confine. You
yes.
know, we've all heard of the difficulties in rounding up a bunch of wild short hairs, as it's known, that the cowboys even quit trying.
Absolutely.
You know, they gave up on the cats and they went with the cattle. So that's the thing about letting the cat out to share the garden. Well, you might be sharing your neighbor's garden
mm-hmm.
or the city park down the street. Having the wild animals out in a really nice maintained garden is the hazard to our domestic animals. So if you have a small dog or a cat, it's unlikely, but the possibility of them coming into contact with another wild animal, particularly a bird of prey
yeah.
or an opportunistic predator such as a fox or a coyote or
yeah.
something.
I got all that in my yard, and I also worry about chemicals.
Chemicals is something that all animals are sensitive to, but the domestic animals more so because they are confined to that area. That really should be something that all the animals share in common is that their susceptibility to sickness and exposure to pesticides and herbicide.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you from having lots of experience with pesticides and herbicides, it's right on the label.
Mm-hmm.
If it says keep the pets off the yard for 7 days, it means 7 days, not 5 days because it rained really hard or we had a heavy dew morning. You got to follow the directions. Directions on chemicals are like the directions on food. They're written for the stupid of all of us, the most stupid of all of us.
Okay.
You know, yeah, you know, we all know that a gallon of milk can go bad if you let it sit in the car for 4 hours before you bring it in the house, but apparently some people don't know that. Some people also are not aware that, you know, the hose-in fertilizer, that can damage it can make for a harmful situation for your pets.
You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty. This week, we're sharing our yards with our pets, and we're doing it safely.
So I think dogs, we can talk about dogs a little bit now. We talked about the kitty cats, which we love. A lot of people don't let the cats go outside, and some people don't let them come inside. You know,
yeah.
there's both of that. And the dogs are different. The dogs
need to go out to go.
They do. And if you have a fence and the area where you let your dog out, I'd be willing to bet you a dollar that there's a little trail that goes right along the edge of that fence, and that's that animal seeking its furthest point.
Mm-hmm.
Having the privilege of designing landscapes for clients that lived in Chicago and other metropolitan areas, this was a real common deal. And these are some of the things that myself and other landscapers found. The dogs need a target. They need a target.
For going.
For taking care of business.
All
That's
righty.
Right. And, you know, they even sell the little fakey fire hydrants.
Get out of here.
Yeah, but if you don't want the fire hydrant metropolitan urban railroad landscape in your backyard,
right.
you know, a boulder is good for this. Or a little log segment that you have perched in your landscaping that you can get rid of it after the dog has completely destroyed it.
If the dog pees on a tree, will that harm the tree?
It could over time, and it depends on the type of tree.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, it has something to do with the animal's diet, you know.
Well, the acidity in the urine.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and along those lines, if you're sharing your garden with a dog or animals that go, they urinate on the ground, there are actual materials that can suppress the odor that comes from that elimination. Crushed granite is a product
mm-hmm.
that is used for gravel-style patios and walkways. It's something that will help suppress that. So if you had this little path out on the furthest point of your yard and you had some, not only do the dogs like targets, but they like the little Westminster features too, like the little tube to crawl through
mm-hmm.
or a box that they can go in and get out of. You know, dogs are funny. They always see themselves somewhere else. You
mm-hmm.
know, wherever their eyes are, they see themselves there. So that's a good way to handle that. And knowing that it is their feet that causes the most damage, you can kind of lay your pathways and gathering areas, lay them out with that in mind so that the dogs are not using the rest of the landscape.
How does urine and grass mix?
It usually does not mix.
So you really should think about doing a pebble pathway or something and keep the doggy on that.
Right. And say you do have a spot that in the grass that the dogs go to all the time, maybe thinking about re-landscaping that. Eliminate the turf, you know, some ground cover. There are some plants that are susceptible to that. Dogs, some dogs are the have kind of the oral fixation, and they're always hungry, always want to eat. I have one of those dogs at home, you know, just constantly begging for food. That's something you want to keep in mind, too. You know, so if you're feeding the birds and wild animals and varmints, they have exposure to the seed and the corn or whatever you're putting out there. Well, don't put it where your dog can get it. You kind of keep them out of that.
I've had my neighbor's dog come over and eat what I put out for the birds. I'm like, dude, stop that.
And, you know, horses and dogs that have a lot of similarities in their little personalities, and one of the things is they it is understood that they recognize a boundary. You know, a horse will stay inside of a fence, and after the fence is taken down after a period of time, some horses of certain personalities, and same with dogs, they'll stay there. But if you also think of your garden, you're sharing it with your pet to make your life easier and to make your pet's life more enjoyable. So at this point in our broadcast, we want to say, let the pets enjoy the landscape with you. It'll make your life inside the house with the pets more enjoyable. They want to be out there with you. They want to be out there without you. But there are some minor hazards that you can avoid by just being aware of them.
And I'm a big believer in fences. Fences make great neighbors.
They do.
Absolutely do. Okay, Murph, thank you so much for the advice. Next week on GLT's Grow, are you looking for some fresh hardscaping ideas? Well, Murph has them, and we're going to be hearing more about that next week as we pick your brain, Murph.
That'll be good.
If you don't mind. Now, if you've got a gardening question, a problem that you would like Murph to take on, you can submit it at our website, wglt.org/grow. There's a form there, fill it out, send it along to us, and it's very possible that Murph will pick your question to answer on the air. We love hearing from people, and do send us a photograph. If it's germane, we'd love to hear from them. Now, submit those questions at wglt.org/grow.
And don't forget, you can download the Grow podcast every week. You can do that at iTunes and at wglt.org.
Maybe humans are what happens when high intelligence evolves in an animal that also has hands, and dolphins are what happens when more extravagant intelligence evolves in an animal without hands.
Close encounters of the earthly kind.
That was un-f***ing believable.
I was waiting.
Oh, that was so cool.
That's on the next Radio Lab. Listen Sunday at 11 on GLT News and Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Henson Disposal and Recycling, sponsoring a candidate forum with normal mayoral candidates Thursday, March 2nd at 6 p.m. at University Galleries in Uptown Normal. Details at WGLT.org. This is 89.1 GLT.
And you're tuned to Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Singer-songwriter Sarah Kwas is the musical guest this Friday at Eaton Gallery as part of downtown Bloomington's First Friday festivities coming up this week. The Normal-based Kwas is a native of Terre Haute, Indiana, and an Indiana State University English Literature grad. She tells GLT's John Norton that her love for writing started when she was very, very young.
My mother is a big reader, but she and I don't necessarily share taste in books. A lot of times she'll say, I love this book, and then I'll pick it up and I won't love it. She read all the time when I was a kid, and I always had a book. I always had a book, and I still do. I tend to read things over and over again, though, rather than, I don't read the latest. You know, sometimes somebody will say, have you read this? And I'll say, no, I haven't, because I've read Grapes of Wrath 55 times, and I'm not exaggerating.
Really? 55?
Yeah, I don't really know,
but
a lot.
In that ballpark, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I just delight in that genius of what they do. John Steinbeck is my favorite author, but I have many that I love. I love Nathaniel Hawthorne, and I really have a preference for American authors, but I just enjoy being able to dig deeper and deeper and deeper into a text and see all of that, the layers. And I hope that someday something I write will have that kind of depth
Well, I'm going to ask you about that in a bit, though, but I want to talk about or ask you about being a songwriter as well.
Yes.
So that ties in. I want to play a song on one of the singles of yours. It's called The Bookstore.
Yeah.
I love one of the lines in there. It's a, you'll be passing on the sidewalk, I'll be sliding to the floor.
You'll be passing on the sidewalk, I'll be sliding to the floor.
Sounds like you're trying to avoid somebody.
Yeah, I have this whole story pictured in my mind. I kind of pictured Babbitts, you know, over there in Uptown.
Uh-huh.
And I pictured this girl with glasses and braids standing in there working at the empty bookstore and someone walking by that she sees from time to time. She's trying to get the nerve up to talk to. And he comes in and then she has to choose whether she's going to avoid him or be seen. And it's just a cute little interaction between these two nerdy people.
Like Rocky and Adrian almost. Except that was a pet store, but okay. Was your songwriting sort of a natural extension then of your love of books and your love of expressing yourself?
I think so.
Are you new to songwriting, or have you been doing this for a long, long time as well?
No, I haven't. I've been singing for a long time, but I've only been writing songs for, I think, maybe 4 or 5 years. Started out really slowly, hesitantly. There's a great, I don't know if it's a video or if it's a something that somebody's put to a video about, but Ira Glass. Is it Ira Glass?
Yeah, This American Life, sure.
Yeah, and he talks about the taste level of people just starting out is so much higher than what their abilities are. He says that you have to keep going through that awful stage of not being able to do what you know is good enough to make it. It really helped me because it's almost like you have to get it out and so that you can get to the next stage. So I had that period of time where I was just writing and knowing that this was very amateur and not at all who I wanted to be. But I feel like I was able to get through it more quickly, those stages, because I have already written a lot and read a lot and lived a lot. And so I feel like because of that, because I'm not 19, that I was able to push through that stage pretty quickly.
Okay.
And get to the point where I was happy with something that I wrote and felt like, wait, this has layers, this has a point, this has a message, and it's still artistically balanced.
Was that when you put out, was it an EP a few years ago?
Well, that was the first project I did. I did it with a group of friends from church. I've been singing at church at Wesley United Methodist forever. So we decided that was a good starting place. This is a group of people that we work together a lot. We're comfortable. I've written some songs for church. Let's do it, thinking that we'd have a market for that since we already have those contacts at church. And I don't think that really happened. But nevertheless, it was a good experience. And I understood what I was doing wrong and what I needed to change and approach things differently, much more in tune with what I want to write and what I want to say rather than what I think other people want me to write.
Well, do you mind if I ask you to maybe point to one of the songs on that first album?
Yeah, I love Everlasting. That's my favorite on the album. For one thing, Cale Sennett played the piano on that song, and he killed it. I mean, it was the most beautiful delivery. He's amazing.
As far as the east is from the west.
I thought the lyrics were really reflective of the beauty of that particular passage from Isaiah about the grass. It's one of my favorite passages in the Bible. So I am proud of the lyrics and the melody in that song. So it's not that I don't love it. It's more of my attitude when I was writing it that I think was wrong.
You're listening to GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton with singer-songwriter Sarah Kwa. You are politically active.
I am.
You're recently politically active?
Yes. I would say that I've always been passionate in my own little world about what I think is good and true and right and compassionate and all of those things. But I don't necessarily think that I was somebody who would make speeches or start organizations based on that. And I think I was a little bit afraid of the personal relationships being affected by being so openly political. I'm done with that kind of thinking. I think if regular people, middle of the road, thoughtful, educated, well-meaning people don't speak up, the screamers are going to win.
In the past, and I've just found out, you haven't been actually writing songs for that long, so this makes more sense. You haven't written politically in your music, and I'm guessing on your brand new album, it's not very political as well.
Because it isn't.
Because this is all pretty new now. I'm guessing the election is the thing that kind of jump-started you, I'm guessing. Is this jump-starting what could become beyond this new album that's coming out in a couple of months?
I think so. This has really dominated my writing for the past 6 months or so. So obviously, we've been working on this album for a year. All of those songs would have been written the year previous to that. So the songs that were coming out are 2.5 years old at this point. But the songs that I've been writing are very much driven by the sadness that I feel or the fears that I feel in myself and others and the injustice. I wrote a song that I...
That's not on this upcoming album?
That is not on this upcoming album, called Bleeding Heart. You know, that's an insult for a liberal, bleeding heart, but I decided to be proud of that. You know, your heart should be bleeding at this point. There are people that are really hurting, and if your heart isn't bleeding, then there's a problem. I wrote it after the shooting in Orlando with the Pulse nightclub, and I kind of poured every, like, technical tool I know of into that song, trying to make it as emotional, as reflective of the emotion tied to that incident.
Can you tease us with a song for the new album, even though it's not out yet?
Absolutely. I would love that. So the song we're going to play is called For You, Dear. We put that song first in the song order, number one, because it's awesome. It's my friend Amber calls it an earworm. She said it just like sticks in your head. I wrote that song after watching a movie called Lars and the Real Girl. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but it is a weird movie.
No.
So it's sort of a stalker song, and the chorus repeats over and over and over. I'm out of my mind. I'm out of my mind.
So this is not available to the public yet, but the public gets to hear it.
Yes.
And you'll come back in a couple of months when the new album is out, and we'll talk about the new album?
Yes. Tony will come with me, and we can talk about the songs as much as you want.
Tony's your producer.
Yes.
Okay. Sarah Kwa, thank you for joining us in the studio. Thanks for sharing this new song.
Thanks for having me. This attention to my ear is not wasted. Your fingers trace it. This attention to my ear is not wasted. My heart in pieces. Question mark, a microphone, the funnel sounds keep running down like a marble in a chute that leads down to the ground. Thank you.
Seattle-based singer-songwriter Sarah Kwa spoke with GLT's John Norton. This song is For You, Dear, from her upcoming album, Taking Me Back. Kwa plays the Eaton Gallery in downtown Bloomington Friday night as part of First Friday festivities. At our website, WGLT.org, you can find individual stories and interviews heard during Sound Ideas, or look for the full episode podcast, which is produced every day by Madison Ballard. Today's show comes with help from Charlie Schlenker, John Norton, and Laura Kennedy. Also, thanks to those who help with our primary election coverage, Ryan Denham, Colleen Reynolds, and student reporters Mike Miletich and Bailey Steelman. Share your thoughts about the show at facebook.com/WGLTFM. Email us at news@WGLT.org or tweet. Use the hashtag SoundIdeas. I'm at WeKern. We're all at WGLT News. I'm Willis Kern, and thank you for choosing Sound Ideas here on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. It's WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's public media.